Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, our topic is education in the Anchorage School District under the leadership of its new superintendent, Dr. Dina Paramo. On the job here in Anchorage for just about 2 months, Dr. Paramo now leads one of the largest and most diverse school districts in the nation. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Dr. Paramo, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invite as well.
Oh, I'm really happy to have you. And we mentioned earlier that when you were the superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District, we had you down in Hometown Alaska, so now you're even more local than that. So I really look at this show as an opportunity to get to know Dr. Paramo, and for Anchorage residents and grandparents and parents and aunts and uncles that have kids in the Anchorage School District or people who teach in the district or work in the district, one more chance to hear from Dr. Paramo and learn what your goals are. I mentioned before the show that I had chatted with my neighbors and people I knew about, and most people, it's all brand new. You're new to the district. There's been lots of change in the district in the last couple of years, budget cuts, all kinds of, like the whole state's going through. And there just seemed to be like a new opportunity. Okay, we have a new superintendent, and it all sounds good. We're just, you know, sort of waiting and ready to go. And then I asked somebody whose kids are long gone from K-12, and she was like, well, where did they bring in the superintendent this time? Where did they come from? And it's like, it's an Alaskan. Years in the state, 25 years in the state, and she was happily pleased. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people don't know that much about, you know, so it's a really good opportunity for you to bring us up to speed. So the first part, I want to actually invite the audience to please feel free to call us. If you've got a specific question for Dr. Paramo, please call, or if you've got experiences in the district you want to share, you can talk to us at 550-8433. Statewide, we maybe have some Mat-Su folks that want to call 1-888-353-5752. And we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I thought I would spend the beginning just getting to know you as a person. And I you know, perused your resume and things like that and found out that you are a math teacher. If you take all the jobs away, you began as a math teacher, and I kind of wanted to know, why was that a starting point for you? Do you love math?
I absolutely do love math, and to me, just growing up, it was about puzzles. Math to me was a puzzle, and so I would work really hard on the problems probably that were more difficult that I didn't know, and I probably wasn't such a good homework doer on the things that I did know.
You were bored by things you did know, but intrigued by things you didn't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd spend a lot of time on them, and it was, a form of success for me to be able to do math, and I love it, and I have two daughters. I do must say, though, that I want them to love math as much as I do, but I can tell there's some people that just don't. And yeah. So we always work on it and, just laugh about how I could be the way I am and they're the way they are.
Right. Was there anybody, an engineer back in your heritage? I mean, you don't know where it comes from. You're the only one in your family that loves numbers this much.
I believe so. Perhaps it might be. So
you told me you're from New Jersey, but I feel like I think of Texas. Were you ever in Texas, too?
I was. So I grew up in New Jersey, and about eighth grade, I moved to Texas, and it was due to a change in a parent's job. Mm-hmm. The economy, if anyone knows, in the early 80s was took a spill in New Jersey, and so my dad took a job in Texas, in Central Texas, a little place back then called Round Rock. But if you buy a Dell computer, Round Rock's not little anymore. That's where Michael Dell set up his company.
So everywhere. Yeah. So, and I know, I think I saw in your interviews that were, you know, recorded and shared on the website that you followed somebody to Alaska, the classic story. Mm-hmm. Your education was really in Nevada, your early education your college education was in Nevada, right?
Actually, it was at Texas State. And at the time, it was called Southwest Texas, but it's a school in Texas, about 35,000 outside of San Marcos. And graduated in 90 and moved up here.
Okay. And then began teaching. And I think you taught in Glen Allen, which is, you know, not not that urban of an area. Mm-hmm. Did you like that?
Oh, I loved it. I was an elementary teacher. That was the job that was open, and I was qualified for that. And it was just your first experience. And I think you remember all the firsts.
Sweating bullets for you.
And now many of the kids I taught back then are either teachers now. You know, I run into them different places,
right.
A couple of doctors and
they survived your
successful
first year.
People. Yeah. So I was like, OK, it wasn't so bad.
Right. And then I think you moved into the Valley.
Correct.
Kind of after that. And I mean, middle school, were you still teaching math then?
Correct. Okay. Middle school, I did algebra.
Algebra. OK. Mm-hmm. And as I noted earlier, you kind of followed a leadership track. And I kind of wanted to know, was that always your intent, or was it sort of your natural skill sets took you to those kinds of jobs, or how did it become, you know?
You know, I've been asked this before about why, and, you know, I really probably am wired this way a little bit. Mm-hmm. I took over my sister's paper route. I wasn't old enough, but I was 10, but she was tired of it. So I successfully finished that route for about 4 years after that, and just, you know, I worked at a Dairy Queen and became a crew chief.
I would love that.
You know, my goal is to be the crew chief there. So
big picture.
Yeah.
Big picture always.
Became an RA and then was the dorm leader. And, you know, it's just exciting for me to organize. And I think part of perhaps my sports background, I was a sports player, but loved to coach. Spent a lot of times as my children were growing up volunteering as coaches.
What was your sport?
I played basketball and soccer.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And so, and then a coach for your kids. By the way, are you the oldest in your siblings, or where are you?
I am fourth out of five.
Fourth out of five. Okay. Born in New Jersey. Okay. Boy, Alaskans are from everywhere.
They are from everywhere.
So, and why public education? You've devoted your life to it. 25 years here in the state of Alaska, from, you know, classroom teacher to principal to assistant superintendent to superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District and now the Anchorage School District. So why public education?
You know, public education is a cornerstone of our democracy. I absolutely believe that. Mm-hmm. And it is who we are, and it is an avenue to bring us all up. It's mm-hmm. to rise us all up and to be able to meet the dreams that we have. Mm-hmm. And it's imperative that I think kids, no matter where you are or the situation for which you're born, really deserve the best mm-hmm. To be able to bring themselves up. And to me, it's what America's about. And so I know it probably sounds corny, but I believe it from the bottom mm-hmm. of my heart.
Right. And I guess I think about, you know, the transformative nature. One question I was thinking about was, change as I get older, change seems to happen faster and faster and faster. And can a system as big as a public education system be as nimble as it needs to be? Or is that the constant effort we're struggling with? And what do you think about that? Because change is just, it's just at the door all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
It's okay to look at that. But really, we can adapt. We understand education is really a human resource activity. And yet, you know, there is so much innovation that goes with it. But mm-hmm. really, quality education is good teaching and learning in the presence of a device. And what innovation has allowed us to do is really personalize that, and we can use multiple manners of feedback and information really to assist us to teach better. And so education, and I've shared this with principals yesterday, it shouldn't look like how we went to school. When, you know, I was a teacher, I knew my content, and content was king, and I knew it, and I was the deliverer of the content. With the internet and global information and mass open source courses, there's, you know, information's ubiquitous. Knowledge is everywhere. And so what is the key there? It's the key of caring, of delivering that, of working with people to assist them, more of a facilitator, mm-hmm. A guide on the side, if you will. Mm-hmm. And education needs to look a little different. And I'm not saying that I don't believe in, you know, the basics. I am an absolute, kids need to absolutely know their math facts. I mm-hmm. get the science of cognition, that your brain needs automaticity to be able to do higher level mm-hmm. functions. I am old school. I want kids to learn cursive. I believe kids need to learn cursive.
That's a big deal right now. Mm-hmm. Aren't some districts dropping it? I saw something in the New York Times about this that, I don't know, a lot mm-hmm. of discussion about it. And thoughts about whether writing and the brain connection.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that the the brain and our bodies are wired of the thinking of the hand gestures as you write. It, you know, the research that I've read, and certainly my doctorate was on writing assessment, and the connections of writing, especially cursive writing over printing, and the connections to thought are there. So, but to me, it's more than that. Our original documents are in cursive writing, in handwritten. And it is a knowledge base. And certainly it isn't something perhaps that everything needs to be in because we have computers. But knowing more than your signature is absolutely necessary for kids.
I noticed that I can take notes much faster on my computer, but I don't remember. But if I write it, it's almost like you want to have the best of both because you pull out anyway. But that's not going to happen. So you think kids, and I can remember in my education, we had to use fountain pens too. We had to, I think, to make you write even slower. I don't know. So, but so cursive will not disappear from the Anchorage School District in your time.
I'm hoping not.
You're hoping. Let's see. Let me think. Public education, rural experience. I think we've got enough on you in terms of just where you came from. You've got two daughters. Are they becoming teachers?
You know, they don't know yet. One actually does want to become an occupational therapist.
She had
an experience in schools where she belonged to a club called the Partners Club, which is students partner with students with disabilities. And so she was engaged in that since middle school, from playing on hockey teams with kids to actually latest in an art class that she was a mentor in an art class for students with special needs. And she has a dream to be an occupational therapist and
that
work
lit,
back at school.
So. Lit a fire in her for that kind of work. It's amazing where it can happen, you know, early on in your own education. Okay. And then your other, you just took one daughter to college, I think.
Correct.
Back Texas. She doesn't know yet what she's going to do.
She's the one who wants to become an occupational therapist.
Oh, okay. And so the one here doesn't know.
Senior at UAA is in the dental program.
Oh, okay. So good. They're both kind of settled in, at least for the first job of
your
life. Okay. Well, if you've just joined us, I just want you to know we're talking with Dr. Dina Paramo, who's the new superintendent of the Anchorage School District. I think July 1 or August 1 was your first day on the job, although this is not an unknown commodity to you. You were the district superintendent just north of here in Mat-Su for 5 years, I think.
Correct.
And certainly we're familiar with Anchorage. I wanted to ask you, have you bought your condo in Spinard? Have you moved down here yet?
Well, actually, the condo is purchased, and it's actually downtown area now. Our other one didn't quite work for us with the driveway and things like that. So, I am not quite moved in yet, though.
Yeah, but that's going to make the. I mean. I think I read that you live in Big Lake.
I do.
So that's that's a big commute.
But beautiful downtown condo. Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, so. That's great. That'll make life really – you can probably even take the bus to work if you want, right?
I could.
So I'm going to throw out our phone numbers for our listeners in case they've got a question for Dr. Dina Paramo. 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I wanted to transition a little bit into the district and you know, you've only been here 2 months, but we've talked about how it's not an unknown commodity to you. Could you compare it a little bit to Mat-Su and what's similar and what's different between Mat-Su and ASD?
Sure. Similarities, of course, are just everyday things that happen in schools, that whether it's
a late bus, kids
doing the lunch, the learning, the classroom teaching and curriculum. State curriculum is the state curriculum. So all of those things about schools are very, very similar and have lots of experience in problem solving there and setting goals, you know, and meeting goals. What's different is certainly the community input and communities should have
engages?
A say. And how communities really should have a say in the types of schools they want. And I would say that the community of the borough is different than the community of the municipality of Anchorage and surrounding areas. And so it looks different in the types of opportunities kids want and what
numbers are different, right? I mean, what was the size of the Mat-Su?
About 18,000 students.
18,000, but spread out.
Absolutely.
Spread out. Mm-hmm. But here we're talking about almost 49,000, I think we were talking about. Yeah.
And very diverse, which is a really fun thing. And not only Mat-Su was not as diverse, but probably more diverse in socioeconomic status of, you know, the strata of students, where here it's cultural, it's ethnic diversity, as well as socioeconomic.
All kinds of diversity.
Very exciting place.
Language diversity. Mm-hmm. I'm going to welcome Roger onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Roger.
Oh, hi. Hi, Dr. Palmo. Welcome to Anchorage.
Hi, thank you.
A year ago, Council of Great City Schools conducted an audit of the special ed department, and that report seemed highly critical of the district's management of special ed. As the parent of a special needs student, seemed pretty obvious to me at the time that district kind of wanted to minimize and bury that report. And sure enough, I just went on the AFC's audits and reports webpage, and it's the only report that isn't posted with all the other audits. Have you read the report or spoken to the auditors yourself?
I have.
So what are your thoughts on?
I have read the special education audit report and have really worked with that group as well. I've gone to the parent meeting, the SEAC, the Special Education Advisory Council, and also shared, actually listened, and just shared my commitment with the group to the concerns. And the concerns were many in not only the achievement of special education students and their opportunities, but the everything from class placements to resources that were desired, new technologies. We certainly know in the research for academic advancement, the use of new technologies and innovation is absolutely successful on students who are a bit behind. And so just looking at opportunities, for all kids is what they shared. And I shared my commitment to that group of taking a look, and as well as to the commitment of the leadership there in special education, Director Anderson, board member Marcette was present as well. And it is an area that our data demonstrates that we absolutely need to improve. It's, yes, it is.
You're going to put your shoulder to it.
I can't hide it. It's there. And I've worked with folks that it's not okay. We're not going to live here anymore, that we need to make improvements.
Oh, thank you. I'm personally glad there's a new hand on the wheel myself. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Roger. I'm going to welcome Robert to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Just great. What's your question?
Just a real quick question. I have a kindergartner that just started this year, actually, at Scenic Park. And I was just wondering if the role of technology in the classroom will expand or stay where it is, because I'm concerned about, screen time as far as young developing learners are.
Well, certainly the technologies for which we can access in schools aren't necessarily putting students in front of screens to practice. We want to teach. What they can do for us is provide the immediate feedback to teachers. We have high schools now, and I know you have a kindergartner. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, where they're using they have their phones anyway. They're using their phones to get information to the teacher right away, and it's sorted through programs, so the questions are answered. There's lots of kids who wouldn't answer questions that through technology will, or rather ask a question. Mm-hmm. What we want is that systems that can make teaching and learning advance it or make it as an accelerator is what we want. Teachers are still the core of education. It's that relationship that you have, someone that brings out the best in you and believes in you. You do what you are good at every day to build capacity in your learning. But what technology is going to help us with is to be more nimble with how we need to change things, because many times we do what we've always done and then look, maybe a month later, did that work? Did that not work? And now we have instant feedback when we use, assessments that are very quick looks online. You know, if it's a 10-point question, there's some science classes that they have these little clicker things, that, for lack of a better word, I don't know what they look like, a TV clicker.
Right.
The question comes up on their board. The kids have a clicker number. They enter it. The teacher can right away assess a pretest and a post after the lesson. So I know, you know, and the teacher knows who's on the other end of that clicker assignment, but the kids don't. So it's a safe environment to really mm-hmm. show what you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the technology isn't setting up computers and putting kids in front of them. The technology mm-hmm. that I'm talking about is what enhances the learning for students.
So, Robert, you have
concerns. Sort of MATLAB experience and more of a hands-on in between interaction between teacher and student.
Absolutely. And, you know, but there's some programs, coding programs, that teach kids routine and then kids understand, even kindergarten, first grade, how to write code. And so they're changing, you know, they can make a computer do something for them or answer a question. You know, I mean, so it isn't about just being a consumer of technology. It's more about even being a designer or a you know, excellent, understanding more than just being a consumer is really my interest, because 21st century jobs, probably the job that your child is going to have, that probably hasn't even been thought of yet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Robert. Okay, so back to kind of talking about diversity in the district. I wanted to, do you look at this, it's big, this diversity is a just the river running through the Anchorage School District, mm-hmm. lots of diversity. It's got gifts and it's got burdens, you know, requirements. Mm-hmm. How are you balancing those? You know, do you, for example, when you hear something like there's 100 languages in the school district, mm-hmm. how does that actually work? You know, does, you know, what happens to a teacher who has a student who comes in speaking Korean and no English? I mean, what happens? How do you figure these things out?
Well, we do have ELL services, so we have special departments that can assist. But mm-hmm. a lot of times we do have the new student center for students who are
right.
just here. And so we work with kids to be able to get the general, if there's no English, you know, the you know, up to a certain level before they go to schools. But it's really in a lot of teaching techniques. Many things are, math is a universal language. So a lot of our kids who speak different languages find high success
in math.
And we look for those areas for which those success, where we can tie kids in so they don't feel overburdened by mm-hmm. a lack of understanding. Because if anyone has learned another language, you know that it could be frustrating. It's absolutely tiring to have to listen to another language and then translate it back into yours because mm-hmm. it's not your first. Mm-hmm. And so we have programs that work with that, but we're just prepared to do it. It is limited staffing, but there are certain schools for which more students of certain, you know, ethnic background or multicultural background will move. And so we're prepared there. But sometimes kids just come in and sign up. And you know mm-hmm. what? We take all kids. So they're all somebody's baby. And we take them in and do the best we can. But certainly the ELL program that we have is designed to work with
English
language learners.
English language mm-hmm. learners. Mm-hmm. And the Welcome Center, in case people don't know, just give us a sentence or two about what, and it's new. I think it just started last year.
It is, yeah. And we actually had, this summer we had some camps even. So students mm-hmm. that we knew that had been in the district in the country, even less than 2 years, we provided a summer school, and I was able to visit. One summer school was located at an elementary school, and the other one was actually a partnership with UAA. Mm-hmm. So kids at the high school level could get college credit as well as getting a step up on some courses in math and language so mm-hmm. that when they went to school. For the younger kids, a lot of it was understanding routine about really how schools work. And if you go into an elementary classroom, you'll probably see a calendar on the whiteboard about mm-hmm. we go here, then we do this. And there's mm-hmm. just so kids find routine.
Yeah.
We all know that mm-hmm. routine is a very positive thing for learning. Mm-hmm. And so it's part of the routine, but also valuing the students' learning that they have already. So it was through dance and through music. A lot of those universal languages engage students mm-hmm. So that we can work on the English acquisition.
Right. I think kids, the thing I worry about is kids early on think, oh, they get a message. They get some kind of message like, I'm not good at math, or I can't write, or I'm really not college material, you know, and what, you know, the education system is designed for them to reach their fulfillment. Mm-hmm. But if they get these early self-censored or, you know, lack of confidence, whatever it is. So is that where sort of social emotional learning comes in? And, you know, that's something I saw in your introductory. Tell me about that and what role it has in terms of education.
Sure. And just to start that, I am a research nerd. And maybe that's the math side of me. I don't know. So everything I do, I try to understand, if we only have so much time for kids, what is it that matters the most? Mm-hmm. And I look through research. And research on students who are successful in jobs after school. So I want to look, what's the outcome when they leave us? That's what will really determine that we've done the right job. Mm-hmm. So the outcomes, what are folks looking for? They're looking for kids to be successful in post-secondary or in jobs or in military. And when you look at where we need to take kids, a lot of the research that has been done at the college level, there's a research by Gallup. They looked at over 200 colleges and universities from Ivy League to community colleges, mm-hmm. anywhere in between state colleges. And when they find the success of students and they track that back, certainly there is a level of academic success. Mm-hmm. But there is a bigger indicator of hope in students' future and engagement mm-hmm. with school. And that engagement is that I'm showing it might be difficult for me. I might not have been the A student, but if I was engaged in my school and in my community, I'm most likely to do better. With the hope is, again, that somebody actually believed in me. Mm-hmm. Research demonstrates that a teacher's belief in a student is actually more powerful in that student than the student's belief in him or herself, because mm-hmm. we all have self-doubts. But if somebody believes in us and can champion us, mm-hmm. A lot of times that's what it takes. And many times that person comes from home. It's mom and dad. It's grandma. It's auntie. Mm-hmm. Someone is talking to me all the time. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it doesn't happen at home, and sometimes it happens at school. And sometimes you need two people to say it, perhaps.
Or many times. Yeah. You need to hear it over and over.
So, and that's what, you know, that academics, you know, when I looked at our data in Anchorage, we have some areas of growth, and a gentleman called in and was absolutely correct that mm-hmm. it's there. And so it hasn't been a lack of teachers teaching. It hasn't. It's been, you know, what we need to do is just focus on the right work with kids. Mm-hmm. And many times it is building capacity in our schools to meet the needs of kids where they are, mm-hmm. to take them where they need to go, and mm-hmm. and building positive relationships with our students in schools allows you, with that relationship, that it allows you to have that high rigor and those high expectations. Mm-hmm. Kids respond when they know people care. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially kind of the work that I know that we can do. And it's not just a touchy-feely. As a math person, I'm not touchy-feely at all. I'm probably very low nurturing. But I absolutely believe that we need to connect with the people for whom we're teaching in order to bring them to the next level. And if we know that at the next level that connections in school matter, then we need to make sure those connections happen. Mm-hmm. And that's really the social-emotional part of it. It's such a word that's just out there. What do you mean by social emotional? Right. It really is about problem solving. It's about how you talk to people. It's actually about there is kind of a manner in which is a business culture and then our culture. And knowing the difference between the two, certainly a shake of a hand and looking someone in the eye, that's probably a business culture. Mm-hmm. That's not in everyone's culture. Mm-hmm. But yet, in order to be successful, students need to know how to do that mm-hmm. In their lifetime for their jobs and their future. That's probably going to be a skill. And sometimes even simple things like that are overlooked when, we're not teaching kids all those affective, if you will, or, you know, social emotional learning are those soft skills that colleges talk about.
Right.
The
right.
grit, the perseverance.
Right.
And the way I see it is kids need to learn to fail to learn to succeed.
The sun comes up tomorrow and you still have to get out there.
Right. You know, we learn now and technology is designed in iteration. Mm-hmm. You know, how many iPhones have we had? My goodness. Yeah. You know, and they keep getting better. And the understanding that the first time you do something, you're probably not going to be the best. Mm-hmm. That's an okay that you're here to learn and to improve. Certainly there's a book called Mindset. And some of our most at-risk students, they're not the ones that struggle in reading. There are students who are the most capable that when outside of middle and high, when things really get tough, they feel like they're not smart enough or that.
Because it was easy before mm-hmm, and they're mm-hmm. not used to applying.
Exactly. Uh-huh. So really that work that goes into something, and everyone's availability to learn is really important to teach all kids. I have one of those types of kids who thinks that if something's harder, that, you know, they must be smarter, they must be this.
And it's like, not for me.
I think maybe they just put the time in. And then I have just a daughter that is just so easygoing that she's okay to learn, and she's okay to somebody correct her. Mm-hmm. But
she doesn't take it like, that means I'm not good enough.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I swear I reared them the same and I fed them the same food, but they're just too different. And so we need to see where all of our kids are coming from and their personalities and mm-hmm. what makes them motivated.
Yeah.
But certainly engagement right on and welcome into the classroom and being proud and happy that they showed up every day is,
I mean, when you
is
see somebody
itself.
Who isn't like that, and we're going to take a break in just a second, but what's your strategy? Do you just grab them by the shoulders? I mean, you know, they're making a choice. They're making a choice to not really be open. And, you know, mm-hmm. how do you, when you see it, because you can see it. You
mm-hmm.
can
in see about it. Learning, you mean, or not open to learning?
Well, kind of like, I don't know why I'm here and this place isn't for me. Mm-hmm. I have to go, so I'm going, but this place isn't for me. Yeah. It's not about me. I mean, and, you know.
Yeah, actually just talking to the kids, well, then what do you want to do? Uh-huh. Because we all want to do something when we leave. And then a lot of times you trace back to say, you know, how are you going to get to do what you want to do? Uh-huh. And so I do share with kids of my own too, you have to do what, you got to do what you have to get to do the things you want to do.
Mm-hmm. One of those mantras for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, it really is taking kids where they are and being open and honest and finding something that they love and build on their strengths so that they'll move
along.
On.
Mm-hmm. Pull them in. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, we're going to take a little break. I'm here with Dr. Dina Paramo, the new superintendent for the Anchorage School District, and we have have her here for another half an hour, so we hope we'll hear some of your questions. And so you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. We're on Hometown Alaska, and we have Dr. Dina Paramo on with us, the new superintendent of the Anchorage School District. And in the first half, we talked a little bit about her personal story, her personal journey here to Alaska, 25 years of teaching and administrating here in Alaska. And then we moved into kind of the Anchorage School District and a little bit of discussion on the diversity. We've had a couple of good questions from parents. And now we're going to sort of talk a little bit about the main thrust, kind of what Dr. Paramo's came here to do, but also what her school board has asked her to do. It's really academic achievement. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about, but we welcome any kind of questions you have. You can call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can also send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So Dr. Paramo, I love the story that you had one question you got to ask the interviewers when you were applying for this job. And go ahead and tell us about that. You had one specific question.
Sure. So after three interviews and many hours of interviewing for this position, in most interviews, do you have any questions for us? And, you know, I was allowed one question. And I asked the school board, what was their lift? So tell me, what is it, your single, you know, if you had to say one, what is your biggest lift that you'd like to have happen? What would it be? What would you ask me to be? And they looked at each other and didn't have to confer, but they just looked all back. And the president at the time said, we want our kids to achieve. We want academic achievement in our children.
Mm-hmm. No directives on how to get there.
Nope.
And so your process is then to look at data to figure out where the weaknesses are, where the strengths are, what to build on, what to maybe eliminate. And you've described yourself as a geek and a nerd and somebody who loves data. So tell me about how you're going to go about this this broad mission to lift the boat for, you know, everyone. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do that? Okay. What are you thinking of?
Yeah. Well, certainly what you said, lifting the boat for everyone, is important. And by that is for students who are behind, we need to have what's called catch-up growth. They actually need to learn more than a year's progress in order to narrow the
achievement gap. Double time.
Exactly. So we need to have systems that allow us to do that, an opportunity. But we also need to ensure that students who are at grade level or ahead learn a year for a year. So if I, say, am a third grader, entering third grade with a fifth grade ability in either reading or math, I need to ensure that I leave third grade with a sixth grade ability. So it doesn't mean just because I'm ahead that I can
cruise.
Just stay there.
Cruise yeah. for 2 years.
And
yeah.
we do have some grade levels for which we don't see as much growth as we'd like, especially in the brighter students. So this isn't about those kids or those kids. It truly is
Every kid. Using data
to really narrow what we do for kids and figure out what they already know. We don't need to teach kids what they already know. We need to teach them what they need to know. And so data can inform those decisions. We have some great, and that's, you know, the part of the technology is that feedback that teachers can have that information in their hand to teach to certain student groups of what they need. So data is certainly a large part of it. And then those conversations that are surrounded. So our dashboard has information on...
Oh, let's tell people what the data is.
Okay, so the data dashboard is basically a system that takes extant data, which is data that's already there.
We've been gathering and gathering
That we've had.
But no one was looking at it.
We are data-rich and information-poor.
Yeah.
So it's taking all the data, and it created an electronic system that designers designed it themselves, and IT, really bright folks. And it's at your fingertips where you can sort and look, and then you can compare on-track data, which is students who get off-track or those that receive an F. We know that a failing grade gets you off-track to graduate. So any students with Fs, it'll look at attendance. It also looks at discipline data as well as elementary data for reading learning right now. And so we can use these data and capture them so quickly, more quickly than we ever could before. It would be lots of data mining spent on finding the data rather than looking at it and understanding it to make plans to improve student learning. So now we have a dashboard, and right now it's used internally, and there is going to be an external data data set. It's in a beta test now, and certainly it's only to meet FERPA regulations, which wouldn't allow students to be identified. And of course, we don't have any student data names on the data, but if you had a certain class that had a certain number of students that were certain ethnicities, somebody could figure that out. So we need to ensure that every drill down and you know, click that you would make, if you will, would not get a class too small to break the FERPA laws. And that's why it's under this beta test to get that done.
And you think you can get there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we just need to certify it, and it'll take, I believe, October 10th is the date that we look to have to for people to have access to your own school, to other schools, to see. And certainly data on student learning and attendance and
can you dial up your own? No, you can't dial up your
not
own
a child. No,
no, you cannot.
No, it is the aggregates of you know, all the data put together. So but certainly I want everyone to know that on the DEED website they have data. It's called the report card, you know.
Of course.
School report cards. And so the same information is there, but it's found in just different sections and different parts and pieces. And what we've done is just take it and place it all together so that we can see the interconnectedness, and we can then see the trends. Where is it that we're doing well, and where is it that we're not? And when we're not doing well, which student groups are we not doing well with? Is it everyone that is not doing well in a certain, you know, subject or
Do you
or
know some of that now? Like, can you say some of the trends that you've seen? I mean, good and bad. I mean, you know, what do you know so far?
Certainly math, which isn't a surprise. Math is probably our most difficult area for which students...
It must be hard
students...
for a math teacher.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I got to fix that. And that's why it's really important. And then, but, you know, there are certain groups that don't achieve as much as others. And so we need to take a look at our practices to understand our what we're doing in classes meeting everyone's need. When folks in Anchorage and or around the state or around the country talk about an achievement gap, that means that with the same instruction, different groups of students are achieving differently. We don't come to the table with different intellect.
We are born with similar intellect. I mean, we know that we can learn together, and but we do know that you know, kids who come to school with you know, different needs and supports and whatnot.
Right.
So what we need to do is have responsive schools and responsive classes to students' needs, and mm-hmm. and a lot of times that takes that, because you know, perhaps you know, there's a thing called cultural capital, and the best people who have the cultural capital in schools are the people who work in schools. So teachers and administrators, people like me, we know how to really ensure that our students have this great educational experience. Mm-hmm. And so my hope and my work in the Anchor School District is that everyone helps everybody have these excellent educational experiences, so that at the end of their time with us, that they have received the type of learning that we want every kid to get.
Mm-hmm.
We do have, I mean, to your point and question, Alaska Native students are not performing as well as white Anglo mm-hmm. students or Asian students.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's other student groups as well. We are Polynesian students in some areas are not performing as well. Special education, the gentleman mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only in the same courses, but even in the courses that they're taking, mm-hmm. students, different courses. And so we're drilling down. Where are the Fs, if you will?
Mm-hmm. If,
you know, where are we have failures? What student groups struggle the most? Is it a classroom? Is it just kind of located down to, you know, a school? Is it professional development that needs to change?
Or something wrong in that?
Teachers not able to meet the needs of students because
uh-huh.
they don't have enough time. They don't have the tools they need.
Yeah.
So those are the types of questions. But when we look at students and say, well, are they coming to school? What does the attendance look like?
Uh-huh.
What does the discipline look like? But
mm-hmm.
all of these data really, there's audits done on them. So it's called disproportionality. And
mm-hmm.
so for any your groups in your community, if you will, you should have similar occurrences in those educational indicators.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have disproportionality, those are the areas for which you know something's not right for certain groups.
Something isn't fitting, right. Mm-hmm. I just want to take a little break and go ahead and welcome Sarah onto Hometown Alaska. She's been holding here for quite a while. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I have heard that there's an initiative to reduce the number of Fs in ASD secondary schools. And I'm actually a teacher, and our principal told us that at the start of the year, and some of my friends have heard the same things from their principals. And while I agree, absolutely, I'm wondering how you want that to look from our end. Like how, I mean, obviously we're not giving F because we want to, so what would you like us to change so that we can reduce the number of F?
Sure, that's a great question.
So I'm going to hang up.
Mm-hmm. So the reducing the Fs isn't necessarily the end goal. The end goal is for students to learn. And so we're using the F data to inform. So the more Fs we have, the more learning we know that students are going to be struggling to graduate, because we do know that getting an F is going to hold a student back possibly from not graduating and learning what they need to learn. And then high school grades are an indicator of future success. That's, you know, mm-hmm. that's been set in research. So what we want to know is, how are our classrooms set up? Are the kids who are even coming into high school, how are we preparing kids for that next level? So it really isn't a high school problem. It's not an elementary problem. Certainly, I'm a regent at the university, and there's been conversations that it's the high school's problem. Or, you know, we actually need to look at this as an entire system. And if our student groups are learning what they need to learn. Do we have the tools in our classroom? What do our classrooms look like? Do we have the supports needed? Is there, you know, look
so
at absences of kids.
So you're looking at the F as kind of, and we got to look at this.
But the goal isn't to
eliminate.
Somebody could just erase the F and put an A if they wanted, but that's not the point. The point is, we want student learning to improve. And so what Bartlett High did is say, they looked that they did not have representation in a lot of their higher-end classes on students who had a Polynesian background. So they looked that there was a disproportionality there. What they did was talk to parents. And so then the courses for which they were taking, they, you know, there's many reasons why kids fail. Sometimes it's because they're not even engaged.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, they're
mm-hmm.
not interested. For this particular thing, they noticed that there were high failure rates of Polynesians, but as well, they're not even getting into higher end courses. They started working with their freshmen, sophomores, and getting teachers to build the capacity to talk to kids, to talk to parents. This is what we need. You should be in this class. You need to be in this class. And it's almost that engagement of just thinking about the success at the next level of what to do. And interestingly enough, they received some professional development from the National Math and Science Initiative. Their teachers went through that. They set plans in their schools. They worked with their counselors. And of course, there was this wonderful story about, you know, they have more AP 5s than anybody now.
So,
you know, so it's a bigger, broader problem. And the solution is probably not going to be the same in every classroom. It's probably not going to be the solutions that East looks for may not be the same solutions as South, but what we're doing is saying when we set plans for what we need to do, we need to look at the data and who is being successful in our system and who is not, because certainly we are not born to fail.
Right, and no single group has, you know, the franchise on brain power. I mean, absolutely not.
Yeah. And if it is about absences, how can we engage the community on a person by person? You know, you mentioned parent involvement earlier in our discussion, and you know, I'm a working mom right now. I wasn't able to go to all my kids' things. So school involvement isn't necessarily just attending a school or being able to volunteer in a school. School involvement is understanding what's happening with your kid in school. And so certainly using the electronic systems where you can look at the grade book of the teacher, asking your kids about homework, you know, challenging your kids to take courses for which they, you know, that more success will be gained. Opening up that backpack and saying, no, I know you have some homework. You know,
what do you
that
mean?
That backpack's
you
yours. You bought it. So really, it's more than you know, an involved parent with school is
not volunteer hours necessarily, but maybe around the kitchen table at night with
absolutely.
Your kid.
Being engaged with your child in school and knowing and parents understanding those things that happen at home that can help, you know, the success in school and teachers understanding where kids are coming from sometimes that, you know, learn differently perhaps or need to hear something differently. And, you know, I share this story and it seems simple, but there was an issue with a disproportionality in MATSU with just a highly sought after school for most kids, the career technical high school.
I read this, yes.
Yeah, and it wasn't, but yet Alaska Native, the Alaska Native population in MATSU is about 18%, and yet the school had 2%.
We're pursuing that.
And we didn't know why. Why wouldn't they? You know, and so we asked, and it wasn't a matter of not being prepared or not having the grade. It was the kid said, well, you don't ask right, and we don't know how you ask. And so it was, again, that cultural capital. You know, they didn't understand. And when we, you know, figured it out, they said, well, you didn't, you know, everybody just put you in a big gym in eighth grade, and then they just tell you about things, but we didn't know about it. So, you know, we asked the kids at the school who actually did sign up and said, why did you sign up? It was because they had a connection to someone else that they knew about it. And then they were the ones who told us. So we requested from them at the time to, why don't you help us go tell other
partner
kids?
Partner with us,
And now, you know, interestingly enough, you know, 2 years later, the disproportionality is in the other way. There's actually more, a higher percentage of Alaska Natives than there are in the district.
In the district,
so, as percentage wise. So, you know, it's not, I think the message behind that from a teacher was like, what do you expect me to do?
Well, you're telling me not, I can't give Fs if I think I have to.
It's not a teacher's issue. It is a school system's issue. It's what are the supports we need to have success happen for all kids? And we really need to look at that. Everything from grading practices, that is something that you know, teachers work with, and how can we align our grading practices in schools that look for success? Because if we, you know, they say zeros can kill off. If a kid gets a zero at the beginning of the semester on something and can never make that up, they're probably never going to be engaged again. Because
they're going to check out, check out. And that's what you're trying. It's not like you're trying to change the standards so everybody can get an A.
Right.
But you're trying to make sure that people are making progress. And the F is an indicator of a problem that, and it might not be the student, it might be the classroom, it might be the home situation, it might be a lot of things, but you're zeroing in and saying, this is where we have to focus. I've got a couple emails. Let's try this. Let's see. I graduated from Houston High School in 2010, and during my time in high school, I enjoyed choir each year and drama club for 3 years until we finally got a drama class my senior year. At one point, I calculated 177 of our 400 students were involved in either band, choir, or drama. The year after I graduated was the last year for that program, and essentially he's asking, is that going to happen in the Anchorage School District? Are we going to be able to keep these enrichment, this art, this music, are we going to be able to keep it going?
Well, I would hope so. And a lot of those, Houston High is a smaller school. And so a lot of what is offered in smaller schools is really based off of...
Who's there?
Who's there. So when the teacher who did that left and you couldn't replace that teacher, you then offer another elective, you know, and it might not be. Now, when you're in a larger population and you have those courses, they're generally, the economy of scale doesn't change like it does out in smaller areas.
So one of the benefits of being in a larger school district than a larger school.
But the information coming out on the new education, Every Student Succeeds Act, or the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, provides some research in that co-curriculars in schools and elective courses are what, keeps kids engaged.
Right.
Many of those courses, whether they're career tech, they mimic more of an employer-employee relationship than a teacher-student does. Mm-hmm. And so they're finding that the success in college as well as in careers is related back to those other curricular areas, not just reading, writing, and math. Mm-hmm. And that's why I look forward to working with this new law that isn't just looking for one test score as success of a student or success of a school, but that it actually looks at the opportunities for which you provide. Research demonstrates career technical education courses are a big indicator of success after high school, whether you go to college or not, career.
Right to the workforce.
Engagement in co-curricular activities or electives. Mm-hmm. Certainly, Algebra 2 is a key indicator of success after high school. So just providing opportunities for kids to take the kinds of things that we know that they'll be successful is key. And those are music classes. Those are drama classes. Mm-hmm. Those are welding classes. Absolutely.
Yeah. If the math is a struggle, maybe the music class is a joy.
Yeah. And the sports, too. I mean, the sports is, and they're... To think that there isn't learning and quality learning going on is a farce. It actually, some of those are the most engaged that we have our kids. And so how can we take care of what we know we need to know with what we also want to know?
Yeah. I've got another question here, and I'm going to throw out our phone numbers just one more time, 550-8433, or we can take an email at hometown at Alaska Public. We've got a question from Nathan. I'm curious to hear the new superintendent's thoughts on research that has come out indicating that homework in elementary school is detrimental to student success. He doesn't cite any particular study, but are you familiar with that?
Well, I haven't heard that it's detrimental. What I've heard is certainly that... the research that I've read, and I haven't, I don't know if I'm reading the same thing, but that there isn't as much gain as we thought in elementary school of why kids need to do homework. Much of the homework sometimes that teachers send home and the guidelines for it are that it absolutely should be something that a child can do on his or her own. Many times in a class, the teacher does a lesson, so it's an I do, I do, I do, and then it's a you do at home. And key to success is the teacher, I do, I do, I do, we do, we do, we do, in the classroom. All the kids are doing it. And then when you see that there's success, the child can practice at home. They encourage things like just discussion with parents or for elementary kids, bring a list of the red things in your house. You know, just simple things to keep parents and kids engaged at home. Starting in first grade, it should never be more than 10 minutes of any type of homework. So what I've read is that in first grade, it's 10 minutes. In second grade, it should not be any more than 20 minutes. And it can be everything from, count this in your house to, do these few problems. It shouldn't be something that a child would have to ask someone else to do. And so the types of homework that I absolutely sometimes see being sent home, for which parents are emailing me already the first week, is, my kid had, 2 hours of homework, oh my word, and he's only in sixth grade. And and so certainly homework practices, grading practices, and attendance policies are all items for which are going to be discussed, because we do know that though, if we're saying, and if a child isn't successful because of what happens at home and not at school, there is a true issue on that. Children should not be bogged down with work that they can't even do, or that a parent necessarily is sitting down doing with them, because we don't have that. But there is a value in the routine of taking something home, bringing it back, just that understanding of responsibility. But the guidelines for which some of the research I've read in the past is absolutely no more than 10 minutes and 20 minutes in those lower grades.
Yeah.
And it should never be something that someone can't do on their own.
Well, we may hear from people who agree or disagree. I'm trying to think back to myself. I think I always had homework, and I don't think I always could do it on my own. But of course, I listened to the Great Alaska Schools Anchorage Facebook. There's a panel of parents, interested parents, and they had a student on their panel, and he made some remarks about homework. And it was favorable to sometimes it's really good. Other times we could tell you we know how to do that. This is just rote. So the point I'm getting at is engaging students, and you've kind of made that point with your technical kids choosing the technical school once they got a chance to tell you why they weren't choosing it, but that, yes, they'd like to, but how to. I'm interested in what role students fill in informing how the district goes. And it's older students, probably. It's probably high school students or junior high students. But, I mean, how do they let you know?
Sure. Well, certainly we're getting feedback on our food service. So, and little kids, too.
That's
so we're
what
trying
they care
things
about.
Out, yeah. But, actually, the board made a change in policy and placed, and I worked with the board president, Tam Auguste Giesler, in meeting with the student advisory board students this summer. Actually, it occurred in June to be able to get a start on this school year. And they had a request to be able to sit at the board table and not simply just be a committee of the superintendent, but actually be an advisory vote at the board. And we looked at some policy in the Alaska School Board Association and other school districts, and that was made possible. And we have Emily, I believe she's a Diamond High student, that actually provides an advisory vote. She also was a participant at some evening meetings, feedback meetings. She attended the Cultural Education Committee, and she participated and shared. And one of the things she shared was that students desire opportunities to be opened at other schools. So if my school didn't have a class, I want to be able to go to another school during the day and take another class. And that's certainly, they're thinking economy first, because the economy scale allows us to do that. Certainly we can't have everything in every school.
Right.
Some of the most expensive programs are career and technical programs because of the equipment and the third-party inspections, things like that. Certainly a welding or automotive or cooking class engineering when you're using CAD is going to be more expensive than a math class. You know, so you see the difference of having that.
Yeah.
And so if my school doesn't have every opportunity, is there an opportunity for me to leave my school during the day, go to somewhere else midday? So that would take common schedules amongst high schools, which is a goal that we need to do. This is, again, a student asking for that publicly, and we wrote it down to mark it. And then just to be able to share resources as high schools. And I thought that was pretty insightful. You know, we probably should have guessed that social media, those kids have 450 friends and they're from all over town.
And they're talking all the time.
And, you know, when they're engaged in either, you know, the children's choir, or, symphonies or sports outside, they're connected. And so we shouldn't be surprised that they aren't connected in a school.
We've just got a couple minutes. I'm going to take one more question. Libby, you're on Hometown Alaska. And what is your question?
Not so much a question. I really appreciate what you all are doing. And as you know, Kathleen, we're working on many of the same issues in higher ed. I was just taken by the comment about the performance of Alaska Native students and Polynesian students, both coming from collectivist cultures. We have a book that's free, speaking about sharing resources online, called Stop Talking, Indigenous Ways of Teaching and Learning.
Libby, we got to stop it there. Wait, say the name of the book again.
School district. It's called Stop Talking, Indigenous Ways of Teaching and Learning, and it's free to download online. People can use it for teacher development.
Okay. Well, that's an asset. So thank you, Libby, for calling. And I'm sorry, you can hear the music. We're running out of time. I have to say thank you. So, gosh, Dr. Primo, there were so many other questions.
Please call me Dina.
Okay, Dina, I will. I don't know. I will. I'll call you Dina. Thanks so much for coming, and thanks to our callers, and really appreciate you taking the time. And maybe we'll have you back after you've got some more mileage under your belt at the Anchorage School District. Next week, I'll be back as your host. We're going to focus on roads and transportation challenges in the MATSU in Anchorage with guests from the borough, the city, and the Department of Transportation. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.